Hello, welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hechner, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I am good. David, you know, at True Hoop, we like to consider ourselves pretty smart basketball people about the game, of course, because of your big basketball brain and the things that we observe around the game and the business. And sometimes you have these sort of prescient moments where you have this conversation about the league, and then these things happen that all coalesce at the same time, and it's all connected to, well, this is what we're talking about. We were so fortunate, David, to have a conversation with our good friend, Ben Aronson. So Henry, you, Ben and I talked, about the NBA and the popularity of the game, overall, and Ben's experience, working in media as he has for many years, and advertising, and his knowledge of how, you know, things get sold to fans, because we're talking about the in-season tournament, right? And we were like, was this a good thing for the league? And the league showed some modest bumps in viewership, which is always good, right? Trending in the right direction.
I'm not even sure modest is maybe more than modest. I don't
26%. So I don't know.
Yeah, like, you
know.
I mean, mm-hmm. Modest is like two. I think 26. Who wouldn't want a 26% bump in anything?
In anything, that's correct.
And weren't the finals like really highly rated?
Finals were very highly rated for sure. It was extremely, extremely well rated. And so we figured, okay, is the league, like, this is good, right? We're moving in the right direction. And so we had Ben on, and we posted the edited transcript of that conversation. By the way, shout out to our editor, Travis Moran, because I'm sure when that call finished, there were 100,000 words in that thing. And he was like, what the hell? I have to cut this out into something legible that people can read. And it really, David, was interesting. So we're talking about, is the NBA popular enough? And you, before we started the show, said, well, we know the answer to that. It isn't, right? Like, our players are, after world football players, soccer, they are the most popular and visible athletes worldwide.
Is that right?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
They are extremely ubiquitous and well-known. And as you know, American popular culture, which our NBA athletes are often stars and in, that gets exported all around the globe. And these people know that. But Ben said something interesting on our call, right? He was like, yeah, players love LeBron and Steph and these guys, but ask them if they actually watch LeBron and Steph play basketball.
Fans like it, yeah.
Right.
Fans like those players, but not the game itself, right?
Correct, but they don't watch the game.
Yeah.
And, well, this is a problem, right? Because this, the NBA is selling this game. So how do we get them to tune in? And I had suggested, well, if they like the players, let's sell more stuff with the players, right? Whatever that may be, Hard Knocks, whatever's going on, sell more things that involve them. If they like LeBron and Steph, great. Give them more LeBron and Steph in whatever capacity we can.
I mean, that's you would think they would have already done that. And not just the Hard Knocks. I liked Arsenal because I watched the Netflix mm-hmm. thing on them from a season mm-hmm. ago, I think it was. Mm-hmm. F1 Racing, which I didn't know
Try
existed,
to survive.
Mm-hmm. is a hugely rated show, or well, mm-hmm. Watched show. And as someone who has a good relationship with lots of NBA players, they are charismatic and they are fun and interesting and complex. And there is no sport where we get an inside glimpse of players the way we do in this NBA, because only five guys on the court per team, you know, and a locker room is small. What, you know, no sport has that. F1 racers have a mask on and driving mm-hmm. in a car. Mm-hmm. These guys are in shorts and a tank top, you know, mm-hmm. With cameras everywhere.
Yep.
So I think we didn't even talk about this on the show much, but you're exactly right. There's just you're dying for that. Yeah, we're dying for that.
There's an intimacy fans believe they have with NBA players because of, as you just mentioned, all the way the game is presented, right? Man. Close quarters. I see their faces. They're right up close to me. And these guys are ubiquitous all over social media and like constantly doing things. Like, this is. So anyway, we were talking about that, and it's just so funny that it turns out that we had quite the last few eventful days in the NBA with all sorts of things going on that are really connected to this whole thing, right? It's not actual play, right? It's like, well, this all these things are leading the conversation right now. We'll first start with Draymond Green and the Golden State Warriors. So,
well, hold on, Gerard. Yep. I want to credit you for something. Because you left one part out, just to finish the point of what you just said. You've been one of the guys championing lesser games.
Your sure. games.
Well, one of the byproducts of lesser games is the game. You've said this, as has Henry. The games are more important. Each game is more important. with 82, it's easy to get caught up on Draymond's swing, like you're about mm-hmm. to talk about, mm-hmm. because it was just another game on a Wednesday night or Tuesday night, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. If in the NFL, the games still carry the day in part because there's so few of them. So mm-hmm. now we can get into this other stuff, which will be less important probably and less visible if the game was the more important thing. Sorry Correct. To interrupt.
No, you're fine. And thank you for saying that. Scarcity, yeah. right? Like yeah, that's right. That's huge for the NFL and other sports, you know, whereas, you know, we don't have a scarcity problem in the NBA. We have too many games, sure. right? Way too many. All right. So Draymond, in a game Tuesday night against the Phoenix Suns, a game the Warriors lost. There was a, you know, this happens in the NBA all the time, David, you know, guys pushing, shoving, trying to like get a hold of each other.
It's just way more physical game. Than anyone realizes. Yeah.
Well, right. But listen to an old head tell it. Oh, these guys are soft. Nobody plays physical. I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? Do you watch these games?
No.
They look pretty no. physical to me.
Yeah. It's a rhetorical question. No.
And so Draymond, in what he described as an act of selling the call, flung his arms and they connected and he struck Yusuf Nurkic in the face, got knocked down. Any strike to the face is immediately goes to the monitor to review for flagrant. I mean, it didn't take long. It should have taken even less time than it did. The minute you just saw it, you knew he was gone. Okay. It came down yesterday that Draymond will be suspended indefinitely by the NBA. And I want to start here, David. They're going to talk about ways in which Draymond can get help. And Nurkic said, well, I hope he gets the help he needs. Everybody's using that. And you and I are not psychologists. And I don't want to go down that road of what kind of help he may or may not need. What we can talk about, though, is that Draymond has a history of behavior on the court that is detrimental to his team, right? We can go all the way back to the 2016 playoffs, right? So everybody remembers the nut punch that got him suspended for LeBron James. But why did that happen? Because in the round before against the Oklahoma City Thunder, he kicked Steven Adams in the groin and got a flagrant foul penalty, right? And the numbers were already there. He gets tossed. Many people argue that's why the Warriors lost the 2016 finals. We saw last year, well, before that, we saw him physically berate and have to be restrained going after Kevin Durant when Durant was on the Warriors after a game, right? Getting very volatile, that whole scenario. Last year, we saw him step on the chest of Domantas Sabonis in the postseason. We know he punched Jordan Poole in the face. Everybody saw that video. These things, there is a history, right, of behavior that is just not helpful for his team because it either causes him to be suspended or time away from the group for, sounds like a kid, but bad behavior, right? And so here we are again, and the league has now said indefinite suspension. Rich Paul, his agent, Mike Dunleavy, and Draymond are going to meet. I don't know if Adam Silver is involved in that or not. To discuss sort of a plan going forward. So first, when you saw Draymond do what he did on Tuesday, what did you think and where do you stand on Draymond's repeated behavior?
So I actually saw it in reverse. I first saw his comments the next morning at 5 a.m. in the press conference, in the post-game press conference. And he sounded so reasonable and rational and contrite. Like he did not mean to do any of it. And I believed him. I don't know why I believed him, but I believed him that, it just probably was just bad luck and he may have been tagged because he's Draymond Green. Mm-hmm. And then I saw the play in full speed. I didn't need to see a replay. I did, but I didn't need to see it. Like I do watch a little basketball here in the Thorpe house, in my Thorpe office. That is not a basketball play. Not that he said it wasn't. I remember what he said. That was a out of control. Wild.
He was selling a call, is what he said.
Yeah. Is that right? Oh,
geez. Yes, because Nurkic was grabbing his hip.
Yeah,
so he was flailing his arms to sell.
I think he's not telling the truth. He may, in his own mind, believe that, but we saw what we saw. It is alarming. I don't know what's going on with him. I have a degree in psychology. It does not make me a psychologist. I do have 3 decades of experience working with players and 2+ decades now with NBA players. And I don't know where to begin other than he needs to talk to someone more experienced than me. Because you just can't be doing that stuff. And, you know, they talk about this. It's a fine line between really playing with edge and then going above it. I don't think it's so fine. Most of our players play really hard most of the time. And they don't do that stuff, you know? It's disheartening for another reason, which is, it's dragging Steph down, and that's a miserable thing. It'd be like someone ruining Kobe's last 3 or 4 peak years. We can't let that happen. We, as a collective, the Warriors as a team, they can't let this happen anymore.
And of course, no, you're, I love where you're going there. We're going to move to that in a minute. I did not mention, my apologies, the rear naked chokehold he put on Rudy Gobert earlier this season as well. That got him suspended.
Yeah. And you mentioned the punch to Jordan Poole, like as if that was just, you know, no big deal. I know you don't feel that way.
Right.
These are things that do not belong. If three different guys did it, we'd be upset with all three. The same guy three times. Yeah, that's why he was suspended indefinitely now. And forget about where we're going to go next regarding the article we just published. But just the idea of, like, what does this mean for the Warriors?
Yeah.
Right? It's a pretty obvious sign, in my opinion.
Oh, without question. And, you know, in the history of the NBA, and you've been watching the NBA a long time, David, I always say my first memories, of course, is the 85 NBA Finals, right? Like that.
Mine was the 72 Lakers. Yeah, I was 7 years old.
So we have a slight age difference. Yeah. Not a big one, just a slight one.
Yeah.
When dynasties end, David, this is kind of how it often looks when it ends. It may not be a player, you know, choking somebody and punching someone or whatever, but it just looks like things are fraying around everywhere, right? Players, what they used to be really excellent at and what was tolerated is now problematic, and it causes the team angst more so because they're losing and can't cover it up with the wins, right? Because you can't stay on top in this league forever. It's too hard, right? There's too many good, awesome people. And, you know, one of the things we do, David, and we've done on this show when people do, is laud the Warriors culture, but how great it is. But David, I have to push back on that and now and say, but your culture allowed this to fester and continue. It isn't like one day he decided, I'm going to start acting like this. We just laid out his history. He's always behaved like this. But when you're winning, cool, no problem, right? So what's a coach famously said, I don't know who gets credit for it. Win is like the great disinfectant or perfume, right? It covers up all that ails. Okay, but when you ain't winning, oh, it stinks in here now. Right now you're like...
Is that an NBA coach?
Don't know.
Sounds like someone smart like Bill Parcells.
Some sports smart coach said that, right? Like, it's just, you're not winning now. And you are hurting the team. You're hurting Steph. And David, Steph as the leader, you know, we talked about this when Kyrie and KD and Harden were in Brooklyn, right? And it was like, well, why can't KD get Harden to just, I mean, get Kyrie to just take the vaccine? And because Kyrie's his own man, does whatever he wants, right? Like, I can't make some guy do something, right? It's the same with Steph, right? He can't make Draymond behave better, right? Can he? I don't know. Like, where is this on the leadership standpoint? So, again, my point is just culture-wise, when we talk about the Warriors, like, culture is always great when you're winning. When you're losing, it's like, okay, well, how great was that culture to begin with? Because, again, you gave him the rope to be who he is. He plays on and over that edge all the time. I joke from the Dave Chappelle skit that with Charlie Murphy that Draymond is a habitual line stepper, like, because he is. But, again, when you're so excellent, we allow it. The line is on the floor, so we can't even see how excellent you are. David, I know you've talked to many like management consultant people and various people throughout your life and stuff that you've done in the past. If you look at like a management quadrant, right, and you put performance or you put managing behavior on an x-axis and performance on the y-axis, right? Draymond is your typical quadrant two player, right?
Yeah.
High performance, really difficult to manage. Yeah. And that is problematic as the performance starts dipping, but the difficulty to manage remains high. And this is where we are right now.
And one of the really surprising things is, Tirody's shooting from three this year.
Oh, career high, 44? Something like that?
44-45%.
Yeah.
It's not his fault that Wiggins is just terrible.
Terrible.
He's absolutely cratered.
And Klay
Thompson's
at
34%, which is a career low for him by a pretty good margin. They have, you know, young players that are just doing okay. All of this, to me, is that I do believe in the saying, culture eats strategy for breakfast. I really like that. However, culture isn't something that's permanent. It has to be fed all the time. And it's rotten right now. It's just rotten. I didn't see the video. We have it of Steph's reaction. It's in the article that we have we're published now. I didn't even look at it yet. It was described to me, and that was enough. But it's a mess. And I'm already hearing rumors of where Kerr is going to be next as a coach. They're not going to pay him what they're going to pay him. It's to me, it's fair to guess. And I you know, I've been watching enough games over the years to not remember how dynasties normally end. You're not wrong, and other people are writing this too. But ultimately, we're talking about they just ended in more losses than what they were used to.
Yeah.
Right? Miami got rid of their guys.
Mm-hmm.
The Spurs, in a sense, got rid of their guys.
Mm-hmm.
Golden State is losing. So what's next?
Yes. Yeah, guys got to move.
The Exodus. Yeah. It's not so easy to get rid of Draymond and
Wiggins. And
Wiggins,
Clay.
For sure.
Right.
Yeah. Clay's at least an expiring, but why would someone else take him? Golden State's going to expire. It's not like he can really help another team the way he's playing. So,
yeah,
where does that take us?
Well, it takes us to Steph Curry. And David has an article that came out today, and it's titled, Is it time for the Warriors to trade Steph Curry? Or something of that nature, basically. Yeah. And I joked in our chat, Warriors fans going to be really angry today when they see that headline. Because, David, you rightfully said in the summer, should the Bucks consider trading Giannis now? They didn't. They decided to add Damon, and they're fine. Like, they're a good team. They're doing good. Well.
They're top 10.
But if they don't win the title this year or next year, that Dame contract's going to look terrible because he's no longer going to be as effective as he is, and Giannis is still going to be very good, and it's going to be, well, now how do we get rid of this guy who still has however much money left on his contract, and you're in purgatory here. And the Warriors, highest salary cap in the league, team payroll,
right?
$400 million for a team that right now, they're not winning anything right now. Like, if the playoffs started today, they are out of the play-in,
right?
As of today,
no.
Like, correct.
Game,
and I think
that came out.
And I think it was either you or Henry said that Tom Travers show for another show has done enough strategy that based research that says after 26 games, the standings typically don't change.
Henry
all
said
that much.
But I read an article about that too. Yeah.
And so we're almost at 26 games.
Yeah.
We're right about there, 24. And so I'm not saying the Warriors won't make the play-in, but what do we do? Okay. So Steph Curry, because the point is, as we just mentioned, you can't trade Wiggins. I mean, I'm saying you can't. It'll be difficult.
Very
to trade
unlikely
Wiggins.
To trade a guy right. playing that badly with the number of years and money he's got left.
Wiggins and Draymond are going to be difficult to move for the reasons that we just outlined. Klay is expiring, so why would the Warriors want to do that? And also, who's going to want to take on $48 million at the rate that he's playing right now? So that means who's only left? Steph. Oh, which first you have to sell that to your fans. Everybody's got to be on board with this. And he wants to go to a winner. The other challenge with that, David, is, and I don't want to ruin the teams you suggest, so we can talk broadly around. I want people to read the article. For anybody to acquire Steph, well, most teams would have to give up all the good stuff they have to get him, which then makes them not good enough to compete for a championship. So we're left with what now? But there are a few teams, David, who can make that move. Obviously, teams with young players and a team with a ton of draft capital. So let's at least go with one. Let's talk about OKC and what they could do to get Steph.
Well, let me go back a little bit. This would not be the Warriors' decision to trade him.
Correct.
If it was, they'd be screamed at by their fan base.
Correct.
My argument was Steph is basketball royalty. And you can argue with anything I say here. To me, he is, I started thinking about the names of players, and I'm sure I missed some, who just had perfect resumes. From Bill Russell and Hondo to Dr. J and Bird, not Magic, my favorite, right. Bird, right? Tim Duncan, like go through, not Kobe, he had his issues. Mm-hmm. Guys have just been perfect. To me, LeBron has been perfect. Mm-hmm. His biggest mistake was a TV show for 20 minutes. Like, I'm sorry.
Right.
I don't hold that against him.
Correct.
And he's still playing out of his mind. Curry's in that group. Jerry West, Curry's in that group. Dr. J. These guys have, if they wanted to leave West, Dr. J, whatever, Duncan, and said to their bosses, there's no future here. I don't want to end up like Kobe and losing 50 to 60 games a season in my last few years. And Curry's better now than Kobe was the last few years.
Way
because
better.
He's just a way better shooter. So if Curry says to Joe Lacob, I want to go somewhere else. It's over here. With Draymond being how he is, like you said, I can't control him. I can't. Apparently, whatever I've done isn't working. Mm-hmm. Clay, God bless him, has had all these issues, injury wise. He's amazing. I love him. We're brothers for life. Andrew can't find himself. I heard someone tell me yesterday, a knowledgeable person with the Warriors told me there's more issues with his dad. We know that's happened before. Mm-hmm. And remember, too, I picked them to win the West regular season. I thought Wiggins, who looked really good last year, would have a bounce back season. I thought Draymond, fresh off his new deal, would play well. And he has, especially as a shooter. I really thought that they would roll Moody better, Kuminga better. I loved the Saric addition.
Yep.
Looney played Paul. Looney played Chris Paul, of course, as a fourth quarter guy. Looney, 82 games straight the last 2 years and a quality player. I just thought they would put it together for one last go around. Obviously, that was a gigantic mistake, mostly because of Wiggins. I think they needed him and Klay. Those two guys have just been bad, if not terrible. So if Steph goes in and says that, who are the Warriors to say, no, you make too much money for us?
Correct.
I think if Steph is willing, remember, Dame wasn't willing for years to really push. And he finally did and got moved. And he's on a good team. Not a contender. I mean, not a great team, a contender, but a secondary contender, I would argue. Their starting five is half of the plus minus that Boston's starting five has. And I really, remember, benches matter. Benches matter. So if Steph were to sit down and talk about where he'd want to go, I none of us would think OKC would be his first choice. That doesn't mean we're right.
Correct.
We have no idea. I mean, I mentioned the article. His wife's from Toronto. His dad played for the Raptors, right? His family's from Charlotte. There's NBA franchises in those cities. Kawhi went home. LeBron went home. So we don't know. And I'm not trying to pretend to know what Steph would think. We can just try to read the tea leaves as best we can. So I don't want to get into OKC because that's the obvious one. I'll throw out one team only. Okay. And where does everyone always say they want to go? And we understand why.
Well, Miami, because the weather, the taxes.
And
the Heat are really good.
Right, two championships, two championship losses.
Yeah.
And a third game seven in the last 3 years in the Eastern Conference Finals with the same core guys, basically. So if you can replace Kyle, so this Heat team is pretty good. Not great, pretty good. Not as good as Milwaukee, but good enough where I talked to an insider from the Heat the other day. I said, Eric strikes me, Coach Spo strikes me as someone who knows, I've got the pieces I need just now. Like we made it into the finals last year with a 9 seed, I think. I think the play-in team.
Yeah, either way. They were a play-in team.
And they lost the first play-in game, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with what I got now, because I got more players and I got this Jaime Jaquez, a pretty good rookie. Not great, pretty good. Like we're gonna be just fine. He strikes me as that. So now bring Steph Curry to that and just lose some young guys and Kyle Lowry and some picks. And again, it's not equitable for the Warriors, as I wrote. Not equitable. There's no deal.
Nothing.
No, there's no way. But how do you say to Steph, not enough? It's Steph. I don't think you can say it. I think Steph has, this is just a guess, I think he has enough power and leverage to be able to say, this is where I want to be. And Miami's got to give you everything that you want. That doesn't mean we suck when I get there. And the Warriors, I think, have to take it. And it's just a guess on my part. So there's a few teams I come up with where the Warriors would be better off than Miami, a Miami deal, maybe about the same. OKC is just, obviously, you're not trying to win championships if you're the Warriors and you do an OKC deal. But we can play with the idea of Curry, Chet, and Shea as the core. That would be the core. And I'll finish off with this on OKC. Chet's never been in a playoff game before.
Correct.
Shea's never been the man on a playoff team. It's fair to guess that they wouldn't win a championship this year. There's a lot to learn. You have to go, we think, you and I both, Milwaukee had to go through pain. You have to go through pain to get there, typically. But there's a 3-year window where those guys are still ascending, where we think they can have a real shot at it, one of those 3 years, if not two, if not three. So OKC, Miami, there's some others. The bigger thing is Steph, has Steph had enough? It's not about the Warriors saying, we need to trade you. I don't think that'll ever happen. He means too much money to their bottom line, the Chase Center. And then you have to worry about, okay, what do the Warriors want? Because ideally, it's Steph gives me some ideas. We give him some ideas. You do the Venn diagram, and then you work from there. We like these teams. You like these teams. Let's see what the best offer is. You have to say okay, and then we have to say okay. That would be a fair thing to consider, because Steph, it seems like he's not a jerk. Right, he might say, I like Miami a little bit more, but if you really like this OKC deal better, I like the fact that I can win a lot there. I'm not worried. And tell me if you disagree. I was talking to my editor, to Travis, about it. His brand now doesn't matter about Knicks, which I don't think a deal is good over Brooklyn. No. Like, just win.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where he goes.
At this point, just keep winning, right? He's got four rings, five, and how many final appearances? Seven?
Seven?
No, no, no. Yeah. Six, lost to seven? The Cavs, lost to the Raptors. Lost to the
Raptors.
Yeah, so six. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty elite. So get there another couple of times, super elite, and don't worry about the city you're in. You're allowed to worry about it whatever you want. I'm just saying you don't need it from a legacy standpoint. Win game.
So I think I agree with you. I think for him, the question is, well, there's a couple things, right? Like, what, because that means uprooting the family, right? So, and he has several kids, right? So what is Aisha and the kids want? Where do we want them to be in school and all that, right? That's a huge factor. They have they'll have a pretty good life wherever they go because he's super rich, but they're firmly entrenched in the Bay Area. So that'll be something. The second thing, that the relationship you're talking about is assuming that Lacob and Steph can have the kind of conversation and the trust that we're going to do what's right by you. I don't know, right? Like, because Lacob could be like, screw that. Like, I have no idea what this guy is like. Like, you know, and
by the way, that's a risky play if you piss Steph off. If Steph says to Warrior Nation, I've given you everything I've got. You've had the greatest run for sports in the history. Well, the Niners are right there, I guess. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
So I gave you another run like that, and I just don't want to finish like this. So, I write about this. Steve Kerr's money comes off. You can pay Kenny Atkinson a whole lot less money. You have to pay Steve coming forward. So I'm giving you guys a chance for a future, and this motherfucker won't trade me. Like, how's that going to go? That's what I would do if I was Steph, by the way.
And that would require Steph to do something he hasn't really done, right? Steph is not the guy to go out and publicly say, here's what's happening, this is what's going on, right? And throw his weight around like that. That's just not who he's been as an NBA superstar. So it would be, from what we know, a diversion in behavior for him, right? Which, interesting. It'll be interesting to see if he wants to do that. I think your point about where to go makes so much sense, because Steph at 35 is still elite, right? All NBA level, MVP level. And you said OKC is not ready to win now because Shea has not been the man yet and Chet's a rookie.
Their team is very good regular season-wise.
But to your point, attaching at your age, Steph's age, to stars who are ascending is the best bet, right? Even though in your mind, you're thinking, no, but I don't know, Jimmy is a known commodity. It's like, yes, he is, but Jimmy's north of 30 already, right? Like, it's a tough balance, right? Like, win now versus okay, or a chance to win now versus but over the next 3 years, and we agree Steph's game should age pretty well because of the shooting, I'll give myself more cracks with this younger team possibly, right? So these are the things you got to weigh. But then it's Oklahoma City. Do I want to live there?
And to your point, does the family want to live there? There's a way to include his wife on the Venn diagram.
Oh, for Steph sure.
Wants to be. What the Warriors want, you know, we talk on the article that we wrote about, the article about, are they looking to keep asses in seats? Do they just, you know, if there's some good players out there you can get to keep the team. And if they have some players still on the team, Moody, Kuminga, they can ship all those guys out and really start over again and no one will come potentially. Or there's also a bet that, you know what, we've built some trust with our community that we know what we're doing and it lasted a long time. We won in 2015, I think, and it's 2016, and it's 2023 now. That's a good long run for any professional sports team. Maybe they'll keep coming because they want to be part of the next group. There's a risk. Or they could think, you know what, we lose Curry. Maybe this year is a lost cause, but we're going to get some good players in. We're going to make some of these other trades, not start over and be competitive, see what happens. Like, they've got some options to try it because they still got to pay Wiggins. And if they can't trade Draymond and Chris Paul.
Yeah.
Still got to pay those guys. Yeah. Although I think they could probably move Chris again.
Yeah. It's look, this is the conundrum because the way the NBA's salary cap and structure works is that as players get older, they get paid more and more money, yeah. right? And you end up paying on the back end as an organization for all of your early championship success. And this is what they're paying the bill. The bills come due on all that now. And if the players are not playing at the level, which we did, besides Steph, nobody is, this is what you get now. It will be interesting. I wanted to talk to you, David, from a coach perspective on how you handle dealing with a player and their adjusting skill set because of age and, you know, how you get them to understand, well, this is who you are now. This is the role. And I'm talking about Clay specifically because here's a guy who pre the two injuries, right? Arguably, people always say, oh, the best two-way guard in the league, right? And with like great on offense, great on defense, all that. He's no longer that guy, right? And he's not shooting it well. I'm not saying that he couldn't have a hot streak
right now, yeah.
But he certainly isn't the guy who's an all-star and who could potentially be all-NBA third team.
No chance.
Right? So is he now more or better coming off the bench, right? And you put Moody in the starting lineup or whomever. And how do you get a guy who's accomplished so much for you and done so much to understand the realities of, okay, but you're not that person anymore without killing his confidence?
It ain't easy, although I think the right player makes it easier. Clay strikes me as someone that knows what's going on. You want him to have belief that he can turn it around, but you can turn it around in the second units too. Right. Let's try. I mean, to me, it always is everything needs to be cloaked or contexted with winning. What we're doing now isn't winning. We're 10-13. The year they won the championships years ago, I wrote about it. Were they 25-4?
Mm-hmm. They were excellent out the
December game. 15, 25-4. So tomorrow. I would cloak it in that. Like, we've got to do some different things. If you're going to keep Steph, you're not going to keep Steph. It's the same conversation. We're trying to win. And it's not working out this way. We have to try some things. I believe their last game, Kerr took Loon and Clay out and left Moody and Kuminga.
Mm-hmm. Loon, Clay, and Wiggins out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there you go. We're trying to win games. Yeah. But this is also a sign, too, of you know, the dynasty ended when they won against Boston in amazing fashion.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I think it's tough, right? Because you hear the rhetoric from the guys, right? Like, you know, I'm going to go to war with these four guys no matter what. Because of all of the history, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it doesn't last forever, right? It ends. Like, you cannot keep this up, and this is where we are. So it'll be interesting again to see what they do. Again, I agree with you. The Warriors will not do it. Do a Steph trade of their own volition. He will have to be the one to initiate it.
Yeah.
And my guess is, I doubt he does that. That's the way
I look at it. I would, yeah, of course, I have no idea. I would tell him, don't be like Dame, be like James. Dame wanted to be in Miami, but kind of kept it quiet and denied that he really wanted to go anywhere until very late in the game, and he's in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. James Harden loudly, vociferously said, I want to be in LA, and he's in LA, and when they've won 5 straight.
Yeah, they have turned it around a bit.
They've won 5 straight. So, Steph, you've earned the privilege of being like James, and just tell them where you want to go. Tell us, I want to be there, and they'll make it happen, I think.
No, I think you're right.
He may not do it, but if he does, they will.
For sure. All right, guys, we'll be back after this brief commercial break. Okay, David. Oh, boy. Last night's Milwaukee Bucks-Indiana Pacers game. My goodness. First, I'm going to say this. The in-season tournament may be the catalyst for a rivalry coming back to the NBA that, you know, a lot of the old heads say they miss. There's no rivalries anymore in the league. The Pacers and Bucks, before last night's game, had played twice, once in the in-season tournament and once outside of the in-season tournament. The Pacers won both those games. In the second game in the in-season tournament semifinals, the Pacers went on that incredible second half run and just took it to the Bucks. And, you know, you work with NBA players all the time. Like, the Bucks felt some kind of way about that, about the Pacers taking it to them and putting it on them. These guys are competitive. They're all macho, all the things. You know, we heard what Dame said. Oh, you know, be humble. And I'm always like, look, Dame, like, you're not humble when you're doing Dame time. So, like, what? Like, it is what it is.
Yeah,
like,
that famous meme of his face.
Right.
One of the greatest memes of all time. Like, there was nothing humble. I have no problem with it. There's nothing humble about that face. It was like, motherfuckers, I'm the man.
Exactly. So awesome. It happens, right?
Awesome.
You're going to humble people. You're going to get humble. That's just how the nature of this
sport humble, is. Be humble. That's what I always say.
So this game, the Bucks had some, they had some verve and some juice to them. They were like, even though it's a regular season outside of the tournament, now this team beat us twice. We ain't letting them beat us a third time. So they came with the Thunder.
Giannis did anyway.
Specifically, 64 points, a career high for Giannis, and a franchise record. First of all, the franchise record, that's a franchise, by the way, that had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Lou Alcindor then on their team.
Oscar Robertson.
And Oscar Robertson. And he has the scoring record. Yeah. But so pretty incredible.
Marcus Johnson was a good player for them.
Excellent.
Yeah. Bobby Dandridge was one of our favorite players growing up.
Yeah. Giannis went to the free throw line 32 times in that game last night.
I watched every foul he took.
Tell me. All legit calls.
No.
Oh.
Okay. But most. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it was illegitimate.
Okay.
I'm just going to run this cat over because I'm going to get the call. Like, you know how that is happening now. Mm-hmm. There were some ticky-tack fouls, I thought, and most of them were absolute fouls. Yeah. But listen, he just kept coming and just kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. He didn't stop. And I think 6 or 8 of them came at the end of the game. The game was over. They left him in and just...
Well, they put him back in because Indiana had their bench guys in, and the lead sort of cutting down, and then Giannis went back in the game.
And Jairus Walker from Houston, the Cougars, had never seen Giannis before. So he was just like, grab. Yeah. And then Ben Shepherd fouled him for some reason. These were rookies. So that helped. But still, most of those were well-earned. Not all, but most.
And this game was chippy, as I mentioned, from the beginning. Giannis gave Tyrese a little elbow shot, knocked him to the ground. Aaron Nesmith fouled Giannis very hard, and Bobby Portis had the Bobby Portis eyes when he came over. He got tossed. It was just all the commotion, and oh my God, guys, really? Like it. And this is how you know people don't watch NBA games. This is how you know those guys care. They're not doing that if they don't give a shit. If they're like, whatever. Like, that's why they're all acting the way they're acting. They care, and they're super competitive about it. All right, so the game's over, and there's a whole kerfuffle, David, about who gets the game ball. Because Giannis wants it because he had his career high and a franchise record. And the Pacers after the game said, well, but there was a rookie on our team who scored his first basket, and we do this every year. And I checked and verified they do it for all their rookies. The Pacers, like, do a thing on the ball, like, congrats on your first point, whatever. And Giannis does do a thing where after big games, he gets the ball and he gives it to his mom and he writes it. All that is true.
Yeah.
But, David, it was all much ado about nothing because – the Pacers, like, we don't care which ball it is. We just want a game ball from the game, which, we want a game ball. There are two game balls in the game, people. And by the way, at the end of the game, the Bucks assistant security director, as buzzer sounds.
Literally as it happened.
He goes straight to the referee, and the referee hands him the game ball. So the Bucks had the game ball, and the Pacers had a game ball. Everybody should be happy, hunky-dory, no problem. Giannis beelines towards the Indiana Pacers locker room, screaming. Everyone's going to hold him back. I'm like, oh my God, guys, this is like WWE right now. It's like wrestling. He doesn't get in the locker room. He comes back out. He gets into Halliburton's face, Lloyd Pace, get me the effing ball. Like, everybody going crazy. I'm like, what is happening right now? And all I can say is, this is all has to do with what happened in the in-season tournament and before. Like, they felt a kind of way about getting beat. And the Pacers showing them up, and they're like, and this is Giannis, all of Giannis's frustration coming out in that moment. But ultimately, everybody got their ball. I don't know if you saw
had the ball.
Right. Yeah. Giannis said, oh, I have a ball. I don't know if it's the game ball. I'm like, bro, like, you have a game ball.
Yeah.
You do.
We saw it on video. The referee had a ball on the court. That's a game ball.
It was just, David, it's just too funny to me. And like all of this hemming and hawing. And I'm like, oh my God, you guys, it's a ball, guys. Really? Are we really going to like get enraged over that?
Yes. So you've got a couple things going on. These are men mostly in their mid to late 20s, which I'm happy to tell you now is very young. It's very, I think Giannis is, what is he, 29?
29, yeah.
Half my age. So, not to say I did those kind of things at 29, but I'm sure I did plenty of other things much worse. And so you've got the emotion of the game. You've got the rivalry part that you've talked about. the fact that Giannis got fouled. I mean, he did get fouled that many times. That's got to take a beating. The Pacers feel bruised that they were whistled for all those fouls. And so it's a perfect storm. This is a failure of security more than anything. Like, you can't allow players to come in the locker room that way.
Right.
Yeah, there's a better way to handle it than how they did it. We'll learn from it. You know, it's you'd think we'd stop having court cases that set precedents. It's like everything's already happened before. No, there's always still new stuff happening. There is a new rule now, NBA. Guys get pissed off. The new policy issue. Guys get pissed off at game ball. So let's make sure we have security for that too.
Yeah. I did find, though, David, and I've watched those videos multiple times, Giannis just looked enraged and manic. I was like, bro, like, what is happening, my guy? Like, calm yourself. Like, it's a ball.
Someone
like,
took his burritos, yes.
That was a little disturbing to me.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know what causes that kind of reaction, but
yeah,
he was not happy.
And then we saw a tweet from someone we know talking about Giannis saying, you know, this guy plays like, you talk about one of his skills is that he just goes hard 100% of the time, right? And because of that, he's often exhausted, like when he's on the floor. And we talk about when you're exhausted, like, right, mental things are much slower. You just, and your reactions are weird. And I wonder if there's any kind of correlation in him playing so hard all the time that this is kind of how it bubbles and manifests sometimes.
All right, so players are physical, and some players are more physical than others. It is a part of the deal of just trying to get under people's skin, bump them extra, that kind of thing. I may have said this on the show recently where I was talking to an NBA guard who's playing against a high-level scorer, and he just tried to bump them as much as he could. Like, within the – I don't think he was called for a single foul doing it. All after the whistle, barely – walking back, you know, a guy gets fouled, whoever it is, you're walking out and you kind of, you know, almost by accident. But you're getting under the skin. I'm sure it happens in every sport, right? I was watching, I might have been watching Hard Knocks. I've only seen one episode because my brothers told me that the head coach for the Dolphins has a lot of similar things to how I coach, whatever, when I was coaching teams. I think it was that one. And it's definitely what it was. Did we already talk about this?
We talked about Hard Knocks, but not this particular. Yeah,
but the defensive, some scout player for the Dolphins was told by Tua, the quarterback, "Hey, dude, bump me all the time, like constantly shove me, bump me, hit me, because that's what whatever the I don't know football anymore, whatever is stud from the other team's defensive lineman, that's what he does." Mm-hmm. And every time he'd bump Tua during the week, Tua would be like, "Thank you, great job." Seriously, it was so awesome to see, and Tua played great in the game. So this is part of it. If you don't like it, you probably have to play another sport. My favorite all-time story is my son, when he was starting to play baseball, most young players are afraid of the ball. Mm. And my son wasn't really afraid, but he also wasn't like, he was 9 years old, Gerard. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think he had never been hit before. And I remember when I got hit when I was 13, I'm like, oh, this isn't fun. I was hit by a hard fastball. Sean Stucamelli, motherfucker, hit me twice. But I did hit my only two homers ever were off Sean. I don't remember if it was the same game or not, but one of them was. I'm sure the other one. I didn't like getting hit. So anyway, there was a guy, we had a pitcher named Spencer Ault. Spencer hit him in the head.
Mm.
And he was the fastest pitcher in the league. And he was like 11, Max was 9. And he ran to first base with a big fucking smile on his face. Thank God for the helmet, by the way. Thank goodness for the helmet. And so from after that point, they used to say it was dodgeball with Spencer. Max, like, who cares? Like, I got hit on the head. I was fine. He was never afraid. And so this is part of it. And some guys can never get over that fear. If you're going to play against Giannis, he's going to play dodgeball with you. Deal with it. Right? You can complain to the referees. I have no problem with that. Let them police it. But just get used to it. I give Giannis credit. He made 24 of those 32 free throws.
He sure did.
It'd have been better to make 28, 30, but like he wasn't stopping.
No.
Relentless, relentless, relentless. And I say to you, I've said this to you before, I always categorize players two ways. There's guys that can dish out punishment, and there's guys that can take it and not let it affect their game. Iverson, foul him all you want. I'm going to the rim. I'm going to the rim. I'm not afraid of you. Giannis is one of those rare guys. It doesn't change the way he plays, and he's going to dish out a lot of physical punishment too. So is LeBron. Deal with it. Or play another sport.
And that's a definitive word from Coach Thorpe. David, before we get to top five, one thing I didn't mention at the top of the show, and it was connected to this whole idea about, you know, the game's popularity, the Washington Wizards, Ted Leonsis, who owns the Monumental Sports Group, who owns the Capitals and the Wizards. They just got approval for a new site to build a stadium in Alexandria, Virginia, which is not in downtown D.C., which is where Capital One Arena is right now. And so the team will likely be, both teams will likely be moving across the river to Virginia. And, you know, it's like the Warriors leaving Oakland and going to San Francisco and all these things happen. These teams come into these cities and these areas and they become a fabric of the community, right? And then they leave and it's often like the damage that is done when they left, right? Like the fans who were coming and paying $15 for this, guess what? Ain't gonna be no $15 seats in the new arena in Virginia, right? So you're not gonna have any of that kind of local flavor and flair. And by the way, all the residents and businesses you displaced when you built the new arena in that city now the thing that was there to the team's not even in it anymore. And those people are still displaced. And it's just, this is the reality of big business, which sports is. And it often hurts the people at the bottom and fans who actually care and want to be around.
Well, I have been twice to their practice facility in Alexandria. I've stayed, actually, the hotel right there. Do you know where they built their practice facility? I don't know the name of the location, but it would be, at the very least, you would say it is very urban, a lot of liquor stores, a lot of people on the streets all the time. When I was with I drove with players. They drove me. And they're not phased one bit. It was during the day. It seemed delightful. I thought it was cool as hell. Like, that's going to help this community. This area can only build out. I bet the arena is going to be built close to that.
I'm sure.
First of all, it's probably cheaper. That was my first thought. Got land cheaper. And security was fine. You had to go through a gate. We have to go through a gate everywhere.
Right.
But I was in three facilities in 4 days this summer, and they all had gates. Only one of them was built in a particular kind of community, which seemed surprising considering they could have picked a lot of places to build a very expensive practice facility. I thought it was fantastic. That's going to just build out that community, hopefully. Hopefully not run them all out, by the way, as prices go up.
Yeah,
that goes without saying. But more importantly to me, I asked the players, like, how do you feel? And they were like, they don't really care much either way. But they definitely recognize it's not what they were used to, going to their practice facility in that kind of environment. I mean, the Bulls have their practice center in a suburb for years. Most teams do. I think it's cool to do something different.
They're in Westchester. They're practicing.
Right. Still in Westchester. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. So I think you're making a good point. And I think more teams who've got to build, remember the Spurs just built this incredible, I haven't seen it, but this incredible practice facility. That's a rat race too. That's an arms race, right? And I think more teams are going to do this, and they're going to look for cheap land.
Yeah, and you know, again, my concern is always, okay, you got the cheap land. What happens to the people and the businesses that you have to kick out and displace for that, right? Yeah. Like, where do they go?
Right. And then what happens later on when it starts being a cool spot?
Right.
And you start getting nice restaurants in and nice
and
bars.
And it becomes super expensive.
Right. And then where do those residents go? That's something to be followed. At Troop, we follow that stuff.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. All right, David, top five time. All right, kick it off. You go first. Who's on the five line?
I'm going with a pretty hot team, the Milwaukee Bucks, after what happened last night, mostly because of the way Giannis is playing. He's just really, really playing at a high level.
He really is. I cheated. I put two teams on the five line because I can do that. Okay. The Bucks and the Sixers.
Ooh, I like Philly more than you.
You do. You love Philly.
I've got a mini number four.
I got Nuggets number four.
You know, I've been a little down on Denver. I don't have them in my top five. I would have put them at five with Milwaukee if I wasn't cheating like you and two teams. If I was cheating. I don't mind that you did it. So who's your four?
Nuggets are my four. Yeah. Who's your three?
So three, I got OKC. My first time getting there.
Same for me.
They're playing well, and this is a regular season power rankings.
Mm-hmm.
But they deserve there. I have the Sixers number two.
Yeah, I got the Wolves as two. The record is what it is. They're playing well, and they're number one defense in the league.
They lost to New Orleans the other day, and McDaniel came off the bench. That was confusing to me.
Yeah, well,
Alexander Walker.
Yeah. Ant, was Ant hurt in that game still? I don't remember. These games are starting to all run together
if
now.
If he was, then that's a good excuse to lose. No. He's pretty special. And then we both have Boston number one.
Of course. That starting five unit, holy, with Porzingis. And you still had, because he'd come back right after the tournament ended. I was like, man, if you only had to play five guys, I don't know how I pick up against anybody beating this team in best out of seven. If that was only the case. But it's not. So, you know, we'll see what happens later on in the season. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next week.